Before I get started this week with my part one interview with Dr. David Hanscom, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a dedicated and trusted stress and TMS coach based in LA, best known for her heart-centered and results-driven approach. If you're feeling frustrated because you're still dealing with symptoms despite all of your best efforts, you're not alone, and you don't have to figure it all out alone. Jeannie will help you identify what's blocking your recovery, create a simple, actionable plan, and be there to support you every step of the way so that you can heal. If last year didn't bring the changes you hoped for, don't let fear or doubt hold you back from trying something different that will get you results. Don't wait another year to feel better. Go to Jeannie's website, jeanniekolwin.com, that's JeannieKulwin.com, and book a free 30-minute chat with her. Welcome back to the show. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I'm releasing this a day earlier than usual. The plan, as you know, is always release the podcast on either Wednesday or Thursday, but this week I'm doing it on Tuesday. Reason being, I am en route right now. If you're listening to this, hopefully my trip went well, but my wife for Christmas got me a ticket to the Royal Rumble, which is in Indianapolis. It's a big wrestling event. It's at Lucas Oil Stadium. So I went to that on Saturday, I went to SmackDown on Friday in Indy. Saturday, I went to the Royal Rumble in Indy. Sunday morning, woke up, drove about five and a half hours to get to Cleveland to see the Cavaliers go against the Dallas Mavericks. And then Monday night, saw Monday Night Raw there in Cleveland. Went to see the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Went to see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Again, hopefully all these things really happened. But here we are Tuesday, and I'm flying from Cleveland to D.C. back to Seattle. It's going to be a very long day. But one of my favorite people, one of my favorite doctors in the field on this, Dr. David Hanscom. It's been almost 5 years since he's been on the show. This is his third time, and we've booked a fourth time already, but this interview lasted about an hour, so I broke it into two parts. This week, you're going to get part one, and then next week, you'll get part two. So I'm excited for you to hear Dr. Hanscom and I. Let's take a listen. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It's been almost 5 years, but one of the experts in this field, I'm so happy that he's here. I was talking to my wife about this last night. We first met at the Washington Athletic Club like 7 years ago. Don't know if you remember that. And then about 5 years ago, shortly after COVID began, we did this remotely again. But Dr. David Hanscom is back for his third appearance. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Eddie. I'm excited to be here. I like your work and you're plowing forward.
Yeah. This is by the time people hear this, this will be, I think, episode 358. So that's a lot of content. And you've made up a small percentage of that at some point, but your name gets brought up often. So it's nice to have you here. Now, the first thing you said to me when I jumped on the phone with you was that sort of your work has kind of gone in a different direction over since the last time that we had talked. Let's just start there.
Well, what I did not understand when I wrote my book in 2016, which is Back in Control, A Surgeon's Drug-Hypnotic Pain, that was based on my own personal experience and the successes of hundreds of patients coming out of pain. But what I did not understand is that what's called the physiology of chronic disease. And when I say physiology is how the body functions, if you consider a parked car, there's no symptoms. You have to turn the car on to have symptoms, good or bad. So physiology is how the body runs. And it turns out there's two basic types of physiology, basically stress physiology, what we call threat physiology, and then safety physiology. And so in safety physiology, your body restores fuel and heals. In threat physiology, your body's using its resources to fight off threats. And so what happens, it breaks the body down. So there's always a balance. We have to have threat physiology to stay alive, and we need safety physiology to regenerate. But the essence of all chronic disease, mental and physical, is sustained threat or stress physiology. Your body does not have time to regenerate and heal. So what we've learned, we've developed a model called dynamic healing, which every living creature has to do the same thing. We have our challenges to stay alive, or stress, or adversity. And then our nervous systems bring in sensory input to process all this input, which, by the way, happens between 20 to 40 million bits per second of processing the environment. Then your brain sends out signals to your body of threat physiology or safety. So if your brain's sensing danger, all these sensors give it feedback. Your brain adjusts your chemistry, your motor function, your avoidance function. You close your eyes. You do what you need to do to stay safe. So you call it dynamic healing, where you have the input or the stresses. You have your nervous system or the processing center. Then you have your output, which is the body chemistry or body physiology. So again, when you sense danger, you're in fight or flight. So the essence of healing, I call it deep healing, is that as you can lower the time and threat physiology and increase time and safety, your body puts fuel back into the cells, the irritability of the body slows down, the excitability of the nervous system slows down, and your body rests, regenerates, and heals. So what we're seeing, and I did not understand this for years, is that I don't just manage chronic pain. In fact, I don't do anything. What I've done is organize the data in medicine to allow people to take care of themselves. And as you allow yourself to take care of yourself, learn how to calm down the physiology, we call it deep healing, that your body regenerates and heals. It's unbelievable. So the symptoms disappear. And as you know from prior podcasts, I had 17 different physical and mental symptoms for 17 years. They are gone, and they stayed gone. So that was migraine headaches, burning in my feet, skin rashes, stomach issues, back pain, incredible anxiety, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, the whole thing. I had them all. They are gone. So you say, well, how can all these symptoms be there at the same time? And how can they all disappear at the same time? By the way, it includes tinnitus or ringing in my ears. That's gone too. You say, how that's possible? Well, as you calm down the body's chemistry, every cell in your body is bathed in this chemical bath. And when you calm down the chemistry, every cell is also affected. And so your body, again, nerve connection slows down. Your neurotransmitters go from excitatory to calming. Your stress chemicals drop down. There are little molecules called cytokines. They go from inflammatory to anti-inflammatory. By the way, in your brain itself, half your brain is what's called glial cells. They're not neurons, they're glial cells that support the brain and modulate the structure. Well, a significant number of those cells are microglia cells, and they actually have inflammatory cytokines in them. They're inflammatory cells. So your brain itself becomes inflamed. So your body's in fight or flight. You know, we have a very stressed out society right now for lots of different reasons. And so when you're stressed, your body's in fight or flight and it starts to break down. So we call it deep healing versus self-help. With self-help processes, you're saying, I'm going to do this exercise or this process or this course in order to feel less pain, mental or physical. Well, what is running the show? The pain, right?
Yep, because it's dictating your actions.
So you're inadvertently reinforcing what we call threat physiology, is that I've got all these tools to fight off the pain. And when you get the pain, you get all these tools on board to try to fight the pain, you're actually reinforcing it. So adversity is necessary to stay, I'm sorry, processing adversity is necessary to stay alive. Every living creature has to process its environment in order to stay alive. So that's just the way it is. Your fight or flight physiology, you use it and you solve the problem and move on. Well, the problem that humans have is that we get pissed off about adversity. So it's that reaction to this adversity that actually really fires up the nervous system. So you have your threats, which are there. So you learn how to process the threats more quickly or process your stretch more effectively. You start dropping down your threat physiology. Then as you spend more time in safety, your body regenerates and heals, and the symptoms resolve. So what I did not know back when I talked to you before, I did not know the physiology of chronic disease. Turns out every chronic disease, every one of them, mental and physical, are inflammatory, metabolic, fight or flight disorders. So anxiety, depression, OCD, bipolar, and schizophrenia are not psychological. They're inflammatory, metabolic, fight or flight disorders.
What prompted you to kind of go this route and learning a little bit more about the brain chemistry side of this?
Well, it's not just brain chemistry, it's the body chemistry. In other words, I don't use the word mind-body anymore, because every cell in your body responds to a threat at the local tissue level, at the local cytokine level, the gut level, the brain level. So the brain is not a command center, it's a relay station control center. So your brain has to process sensory input and put out the signals to optimize your chances of survival. So every living creature, especially humans, want to feel safe. The drive to feel safe drives us to take behaviors to feel safe. And when you don't feel safe, your body goes into fight or flight. And the word humans use to describe this sensation is anxiety. So anxiety is not a psychological construct. It's just the word we use just to describe how you feel when you're in stress physiology.
Yep.
And then so it's designed to be incredibly unpleasant, very dark, deep impulses. The species of creatures who do not pay attention to those impulses didn't survive. So you solve the problem and move on. If you can't solve the problem and you feel trapped, then your body kicks in a more intense reaction and you become angry. So anger is also a survival reaction. The reason why that's so critical is that this unconscious brain of ours, which again, my cat has a conscious brain also, processes about 20 to 40 million bits of information per second. So guess how much the conscious brain processes?
It's got to be way less than that, right?
40.
Yeah.
40.
40. So without any commas or zeros behind that 40?
Nope, just 40. Okay. So the bottom line is you have this, and plus human consciousness really evolved about maybe less than 200,000 years ago. And you look at my cat, who does all these assessments of her environment. She thinks about things. She does things to help her feel safe. Something threatens her. She solves the problem, and she lays down and takes a nap. But here's the kicker, what I really want to talk about today, which has become really clear in the last 18 months, and I'm writing another book on this. I swore I would never write another book, but this has been compelling. So what happens, you look at the dynamic healing model, you have your input of your stresses, you have your nervous system, which processes this all, including the brain, then you have your output or the body's chemistry, fight or flight or safety. So there's ways of processing your input or stresses differently so that they have less impact on your nervous system. There's ways of increasing the resilience of the nervous system from hyperactive to calm. Then there's also many ways of directly lowering the stress physiology. So all three of those are in play all the time. That's why it's a dynamic healing process. And so again, as you lower your stress physiology more into safety, that's when your body heals. And every person is a different tipping point. Threat physiology is there every day, all the time. You're always on some degree of alert to stay alive. So the wordplay I use is alert, nervous, afraid, angry, paranoid, and terrorized. That's threat physiology. So humans just have words for it. We try to get rid of the word anxiety and anger to say activated threat physiology. So again, when that's sustained, it's a big problem. So what happened in medicine, we don't know our patients very well. We don't have time with them. So we don't know the circumstances. We don't know their coping skills. So it's the interaction between your stresses and your coping skills that determines the physiology, right? So what happens, the physiology then creates symptoms, and we're treating only the symptoms way down the line. So as we can help patients process the stresses differently, get to know who they are as a person, is the interaction between those two situations that creates safety or threat. So treating just symptoms is like trying to put an oil well fire out with the garden hose. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. So what headed me this direction is that in 1990, I went into severe chronic pain and went on this relentless search to find out what's going on. And in 2020, I met a Dr. Stephen Porges, who wrote a book on the polyvagal theory. Have you heard of this book before?
Not of the book. I've heard of polyvagal theory. In fact, I think I interviewed somebody on that years ago, but please remind me.
Well, he's the one that's shown, and his wife, Sue Carter, is just a genius on what's called peptide or oxytocin. Basically, there's a bunch of chemicals in the body that translate your stresses into body chemistry. So the autonomic nervous system is in the middle part of the body, and we have the parasympathetic nervous system, which is calming. We have the sympathetic nervous system, which is excitatory. And it's that balance that determines the state of your body's physiology. But I want to step back just for a second. So as far as a dynamic healing model, you have the input. Turns out that for humans, that cognitive consciousness or language is input. That is the psyche. And your emotions are what you feel. Anxious, depressed, happy, sad, content, safe. You're feeling your body's chemistry is what determines your emotions. So by addressing just the thoughts, which is a fraction of your unconscious brain, there's no way it can work, and it doesn't work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to repeat this multiple times, is that healing occurs by encouraging safety physiology. When you can have enough safety physiology compared to threat, you heal. So this is not some magical healing process of David Hanscom, just the way life works. Everything I put together, I have a course called the DLC Journey, the Doc Journey. Also have an app, also have a massive amount of material on my website. And it's a very self-directed process. You learn skills to decrease the impact of stress on your body. You increase the resiliency of your nervous system. You can directly regulate the physiology. And the emphasis is on the skills, not the pain. So again, if you're using pain as a guide, the pain's the focus, and it doesn't work. So deep healing occurs as you engender safety, decrease threat. And what self-help does, it does, self-help processes are important. I'm not against self-help, but it's that combination of self-help that allows you to start taking control of your own reactions. So you're training your brain to be less reactive to adversity. It's not about positive thinking, which is a disaster, just a way of suppressing stress. So you just train your brain to be less reactive to stress, and then allows your body to stay calmer. When you're stressed, you're stressed. My friend of mine, Bruce Lipton, pointed out very clearly that with anxiety and anger, and he agrees with me that these are massive survival reactions. They're supposed to be very, very unpleasant. You can't control them. We have zero say over anxiety and anger as a reaction. What we do have a say over is how we, again, the input, but we also have a say about regulating that. I mean, once you're triggered, suppressing the triggers is a disaster. So it turns out that again, you have a stress or a threat, your body goes into fight or flight, and so you escape the stress and move on. That's what all animals do, except humans. A major factor with humans is that we have language. Thoughts are input that we cannot escape our thoughts. If you experience unpleasant thoughts, why your body's in fight or flight. If you suppress the thoughts, which is all we know how to do, we get even a worse reaction. So what happens, you cannot escape your thoughts. It's a reflection of the power of your unconscious brain. You're in sustained fight or flight. It turns out that the mental pain is a much bigger problem than the physical pain. Mm-hmm. Humans do not tolerate mental pain. So that's how this all evolved. And so what came out the last 18 months, I could get people out of physical pain, could get a lot of improvement in their anxiety and depression, et cetera, except these thoughts torture people. They're 100%. The reason why I say people, it was ironic about these unpleasant thoughts is that everybody has them. It's the way the brain functions in relationship to your body. We'll talk about that in a second. Everybody has some level of unwanted, unpleasant thoughts, but nobody wants to talk about them. Because what we think, well, how can a rational person have these crazy thought patterns? They're not coming from your rational brain. They're coming from the lower part of the brain. So when you're angry and frustrated and trapped, while your thinking brain actually goes offline, you cannot think clearly when you're angry and frustrated.
Yeah.
So then these thoughts, your conscious brain reflects your physiology. So if your physiology is safe and relaxed, your thought patterns are safe and relaxed. When you're in fight or flight, but then your thoughts go crazy, then the thoughts themselves actually fire up the physiology. What's happened in mental health, that these thought patterns are considered unsolvable. People argue with that, but they talk about managing them, and you don't have to experience these things. And that might be a different conversation about how you get to the core. The most severe form is OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, which I had for 15 years. It was a nightmare. I actually tried to commit suicide in 2002. There's a direct link between obsessive thought patterns and suicide. Other mammals do not commit suicide like humans do. So it's my hypothesis that our inability to escape our thoughts is what drives the physiology, which drives chronic disease, mental and physical. So with mental and physical pain, it's the same thing. Your limbic system fires up, it says danger, and so you get a danger response from either real threat or perceived threat. Unfortunately for humans, a major part of our unpleasant thoughts comes from our ego, which is based on cognitive distortions. So we have all these things in our head that are sort of made up, but our body's reacting to them, so they feel real, but we cannot escape our thoughts. So it's a solvable problem by addressing it in four different arenas, and we can talk about that if you wish. But before I go into that direction, I wanted to give you a metaphor of that of a hornet's nest. The nest represents your brain, and the hornets represent your thoughts. Somebody shakes a nest, and the hornets are pretty unhappy. And what we're doing battle with the hornets outside the nest. The real answer is quit shaking the nest, mm-hmm. right? So as you come down the physiology, the thoughts drop down. As the thoughts drop down, the physiology calms down. And then the next phase, again, all simultaneously, is I call it dissolution of the ego, that a lot of our thought patterns come from trying to defend our self-esteem and our ego. It's a waste of time. And it gets worse and worse and worse over time. So in the final aspect, where the really healing occurs, this is the deep healing part of it, is you learn how to calm down your nervous system, get your thinking brain back online, get out from the lower part of the brain to the thinking brain, you repeatedly start making positive choices, and your brain changes. So then you're not fighting these thoughts anymore. You're actually creating a nervous system that you wish. And I wrote a website post called Quit Fighting Darkness, Just Turn on the Lights. So we spend a lot of time trying to solve our problems, fix our pain, analyze ourselves, all sorts of stuff. The healing occurs with neuroplasticity as your brain rebuilds itself. That's why so many people get so better from so many different symptoms. I covered a lot. We can unpack this if you want.
Can you break down a little bit? Give some, because the thing that I haven't heard you say are some examples of how to do that. Because there's a lot of people that are listening to this right now. They're out walking their dog, and their ankle's killing them, or they're having headaches, or they're having allergies, or they're having asthma, their knee's killing them. Like, and they can hear you saying all these things, but what can they do to sort of stop that in its tracks?
Okay, two things. The first of all is nothing. Your body will heal itself. It's way more powerful than anything we can do. So it's a self-help mindset. We try to keep fixing our symptoms. It doesn't work. So what you can do is increase the skills to increase your safety physiology versus safety. So it's a skill set. The emphasis is not on the pain, mental or physical. So anyways, all outlined in this process we put together called the DOC journey, the DOC journey, Direct Your Own Care journey. And you can't go from, let's see, how do I say this? It's a sequence. You have to train your brain to be less reactive to pain, but being exposed to pain without any mechanisms to defend yourself is not tolerable. So it's a sequence of learning calming tools, and I can give you some examples in different areas. But let's talk about the thoughts for a second. Because again, think about this. So we don't have protection from our thoughts. So if you touch a hot stove, what do?
You pull your hand away.
What if I held your hand over the stove and you could not pull your hand away? What would be your next reaction?
I probably hit you, to be honest. I don't know.
You'd be angry. Remember, yeah. The reaction to physical pain is what humans call anxiety. It's just threat physiology. Mm-hmm. If you can't solve the problem, you become angry. So think about thoughts for a second. You have these unpleasant thoughts coming at you. And if you can't escape them, it's like holding your hand over this hot stove, right? We have no protection from mental pain. So we have an automatic survival response from physical pain. You solve the problem, move on. So with thoughts, they're there. You can't escape them. You suppress them, which is even worse, right? So we're asking people to hold a hand over the stove with their thoughts. So the way we deal with it, we use addictions and alcohol and drugs and heroin and all sorts of stuff to calm it down. We get obsessive behaviors. We get super busy to distract ourselves, but the pain is still there. It's like holding your hand over that hot stove, but using mental pain instead of physical. Again, the research lab shows that humans do not tolerate mental pain. It's a huge problem. So I'll talk about four parts to this, and this is going to be a quick overview. But if you're interested in solving this, people that go through the course, sequence at a time, it's about 10 or 15 minutes a day, that is it. Because you can't learn how to play the piano in a day. You've got to go through a process of learning and repetition. So as you learn the strategies to, again, address all aspects of the dynamic healing model, they become automatic. They don't take extra time. It should not be viewed as a big project. And if you're working at it, it's the wrong energy. But remember, the ultimate antidote to pain is play. Mm-hmm. But not play to distract yourself, just truly getting content and safe and relaxed.
Yep.
So the idea is you go through the course, 10 or 15 minutes a day, idea of curiosity, all sorts of other little details. And so you wander through the course. But as far as the four aspects of it, there's a preliminary aspect of where you realize that your stress physiology is brutal, it's dark, it's incredibly unpleasant, it's disturbing, and the impulses you have are just hard to know what to do with. So you realize that this is your survival physiology in action. It's keeping you alive. I mean, what would happen if we didn't have these survival sensations? We wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
They are gifts. They're keeping us alive. We would not be here without these sensations, right? They're a million times stronger than your conscious brain. So what you do, they feel like who you are because they encompass every cell in your body, except it's your survival reaction. It's what you have. It's not who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So intellectually understanding, okay, here I am over here. The survival reaction is doing its thing. So you can't control the survival reaction, but there's tools to regulate it, to lower the heat. But the first step is separating your identity from this reaction. So again, going back to the hornet's nest analogy, you have the hornet's nest and you have the thoughts. And so I call it thought separation, where the thoughts are going to do what they're going to do. You cannot control them. And you can't just do positive thinking to let them go, because they are disruptive. But you and I have talked about the expressive writing exercise, mm-hmm. correct? So first initial step, it's not the solution, but to a major first step of simply write down these thoughts and throw them away.